Morning Joe, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Blue Jays 1-0 at home this season. Changing their fortunes.
Came on for center.
Yeah, it was a long day for us. We were there at 5 in the morning.
Longer for you.
Yeah.
Sitting on my
couch. But I got to go home and nap before I returned. Ben Shulman was just like, he is grinding. He was just walking the halls for hours and hours and hours, yeah. I'm sure.
You know what I bet he did, because he's such a good team player.
What?
When he got done talking to us yesterday, and I know he had like some TV obligations, he then grabbed the ShamWows that were hanging around. He's like, let me get to polishing these rails a little more.
Yeah.
It was remarkable. It cannot be, again, like the amount of shining we saw going on for the 3 hours we were on radio yesterday.
Yeah. We need to get a report from somebody who might be down at the ballpark right now.
I wonder if that's what caused
one thing.
I just wonder if that's what caused the eclipse. It's like it became so shiny that it then affected. I don't think that's how it works. I did utter the phrase physics are weird yesterday on the air, but I do understand that's not how that works.
You sure did. All right. Let's talk to a smart man. Smarter than, you know, he's smart enough to not engage in the conversation we were just having. It's Ben Nicholson-Smith of the At the Letters podcast. How's it going, Ben?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. That was a better foray. I mean, they didn't score a ton of runs. They didn't hit a home run. But, Ben, I know, like, your mentions on Twitter are probably as populated with vitriol as mine are, and it feels like that was a much-needed victory for this Blue Jays team that's just trying to not have its fans turn against them early in the season. Like, is that overstating it?
I think that's pretty fair. I mean, it's been a frustrating stretch for Blue Jays fans, and I think that, you know, that's completely understandable, just given how things have unfolded. And it was so long since they'd actually played at home, right? It was more than 6 months. And that's a long stretch for any team, but especially for the Blue Jays, because they obviously played their playoff games on the road, and then they played their first 10 games of the season on the road as well. So I think that any frustration that the fans have is justified. It's been a long time since this fan base had a lot to really celebrate. But at the same time, even if it is, you know, justified in a lot of ways, it takes the fun out of it if you're kind of losing interest in the team after 10, 11 games. And no one wants to hear that it's a long season and that things can shift. So it's much better if the team can sort of play a little bit closer to its potential, and then everyone can just kind of feel that relief that I think, yesterday contributed towards.
Yeah, it was very, very cathartic. You know, one of the things we've been talking about is just the response that Schneider got at the kind of beginning of that game, and how he's kind of been the avatar for everything that people haven't liked. And obviously, you know, you could feel how you feel about his lineup decisions, the way he puts it together. It's not all his fault. Do you feel a little bit like Schneider is wearing all the ills of this organization from the kind of fan base perspective right now? Because, again, you know, like there's the little grumbling when he comes out to take birth. Rios, and it's like, is that 100 pitches? Of course he's going to take him out, but we all know where everybody's minds go there. Are you surprised at the reaction to Schneider?
I honestly thought it might be a little harsher.
Yeah.
I think that it didn't surprise me at all. He was booed a little bit. It was a mixed reaction as everyone was introduced pregame amidst a lot of hype and excitement. And then when he comes out to take Barrios, I mean, that's like catnip for Blue Jays fans, right? Like, yeah, of course they're going to boo him. And look, I mean, there's a lot of other stuff in that game, but as far as that one moment, like, yeah, that's where Blue Jays fans deserve to have a voice. And it doesn't have to be logical. I mean, in that moment, that was a totally reasonable time to take him out of the game. But yeah, of course, Blue Jays fans need to have their voice heard there. So, you know, I think that if Ross Atkins was introduced, he would have got booed even harder. But part of the role of being a manager is you have to take that public-facing element of things. And that's part of the job, part of the reason that Major League managers, it's a tough job and it's a well-compensated job, but that's part of the reason why.
Jose Barrios obviously reversed the narrative last season. He was great all season long. And yeah, in the innings he was allowed to pitch in the postseason, he was at his best self during that run. He has now completed at least 6 innings in all 3 of his starts, allowing 3 or fewer runs, and all of them. Went into the 7th inning yesterday, throwing over 100 pitches. I mean, what are we seeing from Jose Barrios? What is his upside potential for you? Because he is a guy that's gotten Cy Young Award votes before.
Yeah, I mean, I think his upside is exactly this, and I don't think he needs to be any better than this for the Blue Jays. I mean, this is great. This is frontline stuff. If he keeps doing this, he'll definitely be getting Cy Young votes. There just aren't a lot of guys who do this consistently over the course of 32 starts, which, again, he's been so consistent with. But what we're seeing right now is great stuff. I mean, we see the fastball 95, 96, and we see the breaking ball that was just nasty last night. Really all night, and we're seeing really good command. So, I mean, and also a guy who fields his position and stays composed on the mound and holds runners, does the little things that you would want a pitcher to do, works with the pitch clock. I mean, this is what a frontline major league starting pitcher looks like. This is exactly what you hope. If you were drafting someone in the first round or first overall, this is what you'd hope that player would become. So he's as good as it gets. And, you know, it's not to say that every start's going to be like this, because as we've seen before, sometimes that command doesn't stick around, and that's when he does get into trouble, and that's what 2022 looked like. But as far as what his upside is, it's exactly this, and I don't think it needs to be anything more.
Yeah, no, this is the consistency that allows this to be the more, right? Like, you don't need more than this on any given one night. You just need to see a lot of nights like this. And I'm not saying that as he hasn't done this in the past, but it's just that's what you get, what allows you to be a frontline starter. It's not that you go 8 scoreless every single time. It's just that you do that every time. You mentioned him being able to field his position. Boy, a lot of people were doing that last night. As much as we talk about wanting this team to hit and needing this team to hit, and, you know, I don't think anybody's ever won a baseball game 0-0, -1, so you do have to hit to win games. But when this team is put together, it's pitching and it's defense, and you saw that last night. I mean, the Biggio play gets all the headlines. There was the great play Kiermaier made to cut off that ball in center field, holding, I forget who it was, but just to the single there. It just, again, like, we talk about a kind of dream home opener, and, you know, there were little moments you can quibble with for sure, but the defense part of it was on display in such a big way last night as well.
Yeah, it really was, and that helped the Blue Jays, you know, limit Seattle to just those two runs. You know, the Biggio play for sure was a great play. Barrios as well with some good defense. But, yeah, I think, to me, the guy who stuck out the most yesterday was Kiermaier. I mean, you think back to the fifth inning, and Ty France hits it's a gapper. Like, for 95% of players, that's a double. Like, he hit a gapper, but Kiermaier's so fast and had such a good read that he kept them at first base. And then next batter hits one into center field again. And then Kiermaier makes a perfect throw and, you know, didn't get the assist because Kiner Falefa did not get the tag down this play. Every major league third baseman has to make. I mean, there's just zero excuse there. He has to get that tag down. But as long as we're talking about what Kiermaier did, that throw was perfect. Like, it was exactly where it had to be. So it's impressive. And we watched it last year, so I'm not surprised anymore. But here, I mean, he's just one of the best center field defenders that we've seen in the last 20 years, if not even longer.
Nah, he's the best of this generation. He really is. And Dalton Varsho's quite good when he gets an opportunity to play that position. He's a very good left fielder, but this team needs offense. And I know we were told that, hey, we're not deviating from the plan just 10 games into the season. Maybe we are 11 games into the season, because against the righty, he is out of the lineup. And David Schneider was in, and he was hitting fifth. Like, what is that? And he came up with a couple of big hits. I mean, none bigger than the bases loaded bloop base hit up the middle to take it from 1-0 to 3-0. I mean, what did that tell you with that lineup decision on the home opener?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, right? Because when I spoke to you guys just a few days ago, we were talking about how David Schneider wasn't in the lineup that much. And then here we are talking about how he was in there against the right. And, you know, just as an aside, the Jays did really well as a team against Luis Castillo to be able to put up those four runs against him. But Schneider was a part of that. So, you know, in this case, it definitely worked out. I think we're starting to see David Schneider earn a little bit more consistent playing time. I don't think that means that we see that much less of Dalton Varsho, because really he's got a chance to run into 25 home runs this year, and he's got a chance to be one of the reasons that this offense does turn around. So I think the Jays still really believe in Dalton Varsho, and nothing about the first 10, 11 games has shifted that. So I'd expect him to be in the lineup 5 days a week going forward, if not more.
Kind of ruins my theory that Ben reminded me of this morning that he should be catching now if he's going to be taken out of the lineup for Davis Schneider. I mean, I know I brought this up to you before, but if this is going to be part of the equation and Danny Jansen's a free agent, like, do you think there's any world where they revisit this, or that's just done? He's an outfielder now, and I need to stop talking about this forever.
Well, I mean, you can always stop or keep talking about it, friend. I'm here for
this. You said the thing first. Freudian slip. I knew what you wanted to say, Ben. I know.
But, yeah, I think it's done. I mean, I don't think that you're not going to do that mid-season. If they were ever going to try to reintegrate him into the catching mix, the time to do that would have been spring, when you have all kinds of time and you have all these resources and less pressure. I just don't think you try to do that mid-season. So to me, Dalton Varsho's an outfielder, and that's kind of it.
Where is the leash at with Bowden Francis right now? I mean, he looked so good early on in that Yankees stadium start, and then it all came apart on the one swing of the bat off Giancarlo Stanton's swing. I mean, before that, he got into some walk trouble to load the bases, but and it's not like there's an obvious candidate right now. Yuriel Rodriguez isn't, I don't think, ready for major league action at the moment. And obviously, Alek Manoah becomes less and less a factor the more we see those minor league numbers. Where is Bowden Francis's leash?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, he's gone from facing Houston and the Yankees on the road. That is a tough way to start. Now, he didn't make the most of it. He did not execute or pitch to the height of his abilities. That's clear. At the same time, it'll be a lot easier this weekend when he faces the Rockies in Toronto. The Rockies, obviously, a pretty decent team at home, but a really, really bad team on the road offensively. So that is a favorable matchup up there with, like, the White Sox or something. So, you know, we'll see what he can do against the Rockies. And at that point, if the struggles continue, the Jays really would have to look at other options. I don't know exactly what those would be. Maybe Yuriel Rodriguez could give you four. He's stretched out to about 50 pitches right now. So you're certainly not getting six innings out of him. But Rodriguez has pitched really well, and he's got major league stuff, and he's pushing at AAA. So he's definitely closer than Rick Tiedemann, who kind of continues developing. And Manoah, I mean, like, that he's just got to throw strikes. It's not close to being a major league pitcher right now. Just based on, you need to have him more consistently in the strike zone before you're confident calling him up to face the best offenses in the game. So step one for him is just throwing strikes, and that's not happening just yet.
Yeah, and I guess we can save this conversation for when it happens, but he's on the clock, right? The 30-day rehab clock, where they have to make a decision at the conclusion of 30 days whether to option him or call him up to the major. And he has options, right? But he wasn't so receptive to being optioned a season ago. And I guess part of that was that he thought he was injured, or claimed that it was injury related, and that it maybe should have been an injured list situation and not an optioning. I mean, could this get ugly in 30 days if, again, we're not seeing the results in the minor leagues, but he thinks he's ready for the major leagues? Is there potential for some real conflict between Alek Manoah and the Blue Jays in less than a month?
You know, it's not my read on the situation. There's always that possibility. You hope it doesn't happen. But my read on the situation is that the vibes seem to be good, and it's certainly much improved between the Blue Jays and Manoah. It's more a question of what the production looks like. And yeah, if this continues, if he's not able to consistently be in the strike zone, he did walk four and hit one batter in that first outing. The Blue Jays say that they're not concerned with that, but it would be hard not to be. I think that most neutral observers would view that as a significant issue with him not throwing strikes. So, you know, at this point, yeah, the logical thing to do for the Blue Jays would be to let his clock run out and then option him if he's not throwing more strikes.
Yeah, boy, that'll be an interesting fork in the road when we get there, because I just have a feeling it's not going to be super everybody being on the same page there. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it sorts itself out. Like I said, or like Ben, both of you, Ben, said, we have 29 days or so to sort that out. Chris Bassett getting the ball tonight. It's been hardly a disaster to start his season, but you're still looking for that first, Chris Bassett game from last year. Again, 4-earned run in each. You can work around that. Not the way the offense was going in those games. How important is it for him to, you know, if this was a hitter who'd, you know, obviously you can't equate starts to at-bats, but who'd had the start he'd had, you go, yeah, you just need to see him kind of have something drop or have one get out of the park for him. How important is it for Bassett to kind of have a, again, I don't want to overstate it, but a bit of a bounce back, a get-right start tonight?
Yeah, I think it's very important. It really hasn't gone his way the first couple starts of the season. And if you're trying to picture how the Blue Jays get, you know, toward the top of the American League East or back into the playoffs, like, they're going to need Chris Bassett. I mean, you look at some of the other questions in their rotation. You know, the hope is obviously that Kevin Gausman's velo questions were really just related to the cold temperatures in New York, and there's nothing more to it than that. And they're hoping that Bowden Francis can get things going and that Manoa eventually can, and all these other guys. But you're hoping, as all that unfolds, that Chris Bassett and Kikuchi and Barrios can really be stabilizers for the rotation. So absolutely, every Chris Bassett start is a big one, and especially because he hasn't yet had that good start. I mean, there's a little frustration there on his part, you know, talking to him after his start in Houston. You know, of course, he's capable of more. He knows he's capable of more, and to not get to that level, I think, is frustrating for sure for him.
All right, game two of 81 home game. So I guess only 80 remaining at Rogers Center. Game one went pretty well. Ben, thanks for this, buddy.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
Ben Nicholson-Smith of the At the Letters podcast. I guess we'll see with Dalton Varsho. I mean, he did factually hit 20 home runs a season ago.
Boy, yeah, didn't feel like it.
And if his home numbers were anything like his road numbers a season ago, we'd be having a different conversation. He plays incredible defense and not a premium defensive position, left field. But he can capably,
unless you're in Houston, you got to work around that box, I guess.
I suppose. But I know I sound like a broken record here, but I think we can all agree Davis Schneider needs to continue to get playing time.
Yes.
And how that happens, like, if it's, listen, Kevin Biggio is fine.
Yep.
He's also left-handed, and I think he's performed better offensively than Dalton Varsho.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd prefer to have him in the lineup over, if we're just talking about offense.
Right.
But yeah, okay. One of Dalton Varsho or Kevin Biggio, even against righties, has to sit because Davis Schneider needs to play, or it's Justin Turner playing third base and he's the DH. I'm sorry. Until further notice.
Yeah, I do not disagree. I would love to sit here and tell you you're wrong about the Babe, but you're not. You're right. He needs to play.
All right, so Maple Leafs have two games against the Devils this week, one at home on Thursday and tonight on the road in New Jersey. And we talked to Jason Bukala about some of the depth options and some of the questions that the Leafs have to answer here as they get healthier, and specifically Cali Yarncroke.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, the Leafs have this, like, incredible, they're in an incredible spot in that they have lots of capable forwards.
Yeah.
And some capable forward is not going to be playing in game one of the postseason. One capable forward right now, and Nick Robertson isn't playing. And he's done the one thing he was asked to do, which is score goals. And he's just like, I did that. And like, sorry, buddy. On the outside looking in.
Have you seen Bobby McMahon? He scores goals and he's so big.
Yeah.
So eat it. You're right. Like, Robertson, I didn't even include in this because he just seems so far removed from the conversation. It almost feels like it has to be Nylander or Marner getting hurt for him to make his way back into the lineup right now, given what they like of the utility in that bottom six. And honestly, Bukala talking about the upgrades that have been added at those types of positions, the middle six, the bottom six, if you will, it's jarring how different it is from last year. So I pulled up last year's Leaf team. Just numbers alone. Now, this includes goalies and defensemen as well, so all the players who played. 47 Leafs got in a game last year. Now, some of these don't count. Like, one of those, for example, is Jet Alexander, okay? He doesn't really count. Okay, so let's put the number to 46.
Okay.
The amount of guys that have suited up for the Leafs this year, and part of this is we'll see what happens in those last two games. Maybe this number expands by a fair amount. We only used 33 players this year. Some of the guys that the Leafs were leaning on, I'm going to just read their names and tell you how many games they played. Now, some of this... Alex Kerfoot.
Yeah.
He wasn't a problem. But he wasn't a solution. We saw it with these guys, with Marner, with Nylander, with Matthews, with Tavares. Tried all, played all 82 games last year. Pick whichever of the supporting cast you think he replaced. It's been an upgrade. If it's Max Domi, in spades. Zach Aston-Reese.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He played 77 games for this team last year.
That's a lot.
Okay. This one's not as funny, so I'll just skip to the I'll skip one and go to a lesser gameplay, but it's funny. Dennis Malgin played 23 games. Yeah. Pierre Engvall, 58. Yeah. Wayne Simmonds, God love him, but the tread was gone on the tires. He played 18 games.
Wow.
Joey Anderson. Remember him?
Sure.
You shouldn't. He played 14. Dryden Hunt played 9 games. Abe Kubel, that very short-lived experience, he played 6 games at the beginning of the season. And then these guys just like, hey, remember some guys. Alex Steeves, Nick Abruzzese, Kyle Clifford, Semyon Dur-Argachinsev, and this guy did have a moment, so save him for last. Radim Zahorna, the big center. Remember, he scored a goal against the Pens. He was like 6'7". He's a huge center. Played 2 games last year. But those are the types of players that you're getting Bobby McMahon minutes from right now. Cali Yarncroc, David Camp. I know he was here last year, but he is firmly in that class of player on this year's team. When you just look at the numbers, those guys that have been replaced by, again, pick your middle-class player on the Leafs this year, it's jarring how much better the supporting cast is, honestly.
Yeah, and it's hard. You can't say it's the best.
Nope, because Kadri played.
Yeah, who's a... You had Nazem Kadri as your third line center. Right now it's Pontus Holmberg.
And I didn't include the guys that pushed those out, right? Like that's Noah Chari coming in and pushing out and Ryan O'Reilly. So after the deadline, it was very different. But man, look at the body of that team from last year compared to this one.
That's not very good.
No, it's not.
Like, yeah, Alex Kerfoot, God love him, killing penalties and
score the OT winner.
What have you. Really fast, too. Smart dude, too.
More quick than fast, got to be honest.
Okay.
Very smart, know. Though.
You're right. We're parsing. He's quick with the brain, too. Yeah, that is jarring. Does it make you think differently about this team's chances? Because that was a team that finished with a bunch of points, and boy, they looked really good and, like, had a bigger swing at the deadline, right?
Yep.
And there's no Ryan O'Reilly walking through those doors for the Maple Leafs this season. Now, that being said, Tyler Bertuzzi and limited track record in the postseason looked pretty good. Max Domi, same deal. They don't have a Conn Smythe trophy, though. But, yeah, it's just there's going to be legit. Like, I'm talking in earnest, and you can't say that I'm wrong about Matthew Nyes not being in the game one lineup for the Maple Leafs.
But even him, he only played 3 games for this team last year in the regular season. I know playoffs, he got in there, but again, like, he's another guy who played very sparingly last year in the mix this year for this team. It's jarring. And Domi, when you ask me if it makes me feel better, he's the one guy. He feels like the X factor type. You're right. He doesn't have a Conn Smythe trophy, but he has the moxie of what you want the Leafs team to feel like. You know, we do this, like, who's the real captain stuff. It's not Max Domi, but if we're doing the, like, leadership group or leadership core, he is already firmly a part of it. He's talking after all the games. He's going right into Bunting's face. He gives you that attitude that you've always wanted from this team, and it's from a good player. It's not Ryan Reeves, who, again, has changed how we feel about him even completely right now. It's not Ryan Reeves running around and making him feel strong. No, it's a guy in Max Domi who at his weight class or at his weight class will go anybody who wants it and he'll yap at anybody who doesn't want it, and he can perform. And and this part can't be overstated as well. He knows what it means to do it here. He does. He saw it. Not the ultimate it, but he saw what it meant to have success here and what that tastes and feels like.
Well, plus all the depth forward options with this Leafs team have been here all season long and have built up some chemistry. That's not really baseball,
no,
right?
That's really important.
Like, and okay, they had a bit of runway at the end of the season, but Matthew Nyes gets dropped in the final 3 games. He's asked to play a big role and had some big moments in the postseason
as well.
And Ryan O'Reilly, I mean, guy also had some big moments. But there feels like there's real chemistry with this
cohesion.
Team. Like they know what to expect from each other. And, like, just go back to the first month of Tyler Bertuzzi and Max Domi. Those are good players.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a while for people to get used to each other. That this
This is not something that's being adjusted on the fly.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, not for nothing, they do seem to enjoy each other's company.
They really do. I brought this up yesterday. Auston Matthews, I don't think, has ever had more fun in his life.
Right.
Right now. It really seems that way. And part of it is just, yeah, it's a good week. Like, he scored 65. Revo's beating the wheels off two guys in a week. One of them in Montreal. How could you not? But it seems like he's having as much fun as he's ever had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that was supposed, like, Ryan Reeves was supposed to be the social convener mm-hmm. for this team, and that's part of it, I'm sure, off the ice. Like, maybe they're getting together more, but it just, like, on the ice, it seemed like everybody gets along.
Yeah, they really do. The cohesion is what stands out to me, for mm-hmm. sure.
All right, when we come back, Blue Jays, Mariners game two tonight down at Rogers Center. We'll talk to Mike Petriello, MLB.com. Currently working for Blue Jay Central on Sportsnet. He joins us next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Annis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ben Annis, Brent Gunning. David Schneider with an insane start to his career at Fenway Park against the Red Sox. An insane first foray into Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. First 35 games, first 141 plate appearances. An OPS of 1,008. Hitting .276, .404 on base. .603 slugging, 8 home runs. And you're like, well, well done. Like, you put yourself on the radar. Well mm-hmm. done. You get to go to your first Major League spring training. He was not even in spring training a season ago. And he got to go to spring training this year. And he got to play in his first Major League Grapefruit League games.
I'm sure an honor for him.
Yeah. And I guess there was some debate about him making the team, but he didn't perform all that well in those spring training games. And he still made the team on the strength of those 35 games. But he doesn't get to start, especially against righties early in the season. And then he hits the home run against Josh Hader.
And you cried. Yeah.
And now we're looking at 8 games and 20 more plate appearances where, like, everybody's waiting for him to fail. Not the people in my listening audience, I don't think.
Well, not
like,
you.
And certainly not me, but people, it feels like, within that organization are, like, waiting for the other shoe to drop, and all he's done is, in the 20 plate appearances he's had this season, had a .932 OPS, couple of home runs, and yeah, big hit yesterday, albeit a bloop single up the middle with the bases loaded, though, as the Blue Jays take game one of three against the Seattle Mariners.
No pictures in the box score.
That's correct. Let's talk to Mike Petriello of MLB.com, working for Blue Jays Central throughout this series. Thanks for doing this, Mike. How's it going?
Good morning, guys. Happy to be here.
So, ballpark. Like, let's get, one, your sense of the new renovations, and two, how bizarrely it played last season. Like, are we going to get a sense of whether this is truly like a pitcher's ballpark this season, or do we have to wait for 3 years? Like, even 2 years of sample, not enough to know how this new configuration plays.
Yeah, not only 2 years, but years where they keep changing things.
Yeah. Right?
Like, I kept talking to people yesterday saying, you know what's going to be great is opening day 2025, where you're not going to have all sorts of new things. You're not going to have half a season played, you know, in minor league ballparks because of COVID. You might just have a normal, regular offseason and the same ballpark 2 years in a row. And I do think that's going to help us a lot, right? Because you could look at the data from last year, and I did this yesterday on TV, and what happened mostly was it seemed like the ball didn't fly as well, you know, especially for right-handed batters. The carry just wasn't there. The numbers support that. The players say that, so I believe it's true, but it's also 1 year, right? It could be total noise, and we've got more changes this year. I'm hoping we'll get more data and know a little bit more by this time next year, but at a certain point, we just need the ballpark to be the same for many years in a row.
Yeah, it's funny you say 2025 is like, well, that will be the year that everything's normal, and it's like, yeah, depending on what happens this year, the two guys that people think of when they think of the team might not be here. So yeah, it'll be normal for the ballpark, maybe, but we'll see what the team looks like between now and then. You know, as the year kind of evolves, again, like, I, this is teasing out the answer you just gave, but I'm trying to dive in here, like, is there a point in this year where we'll have enough data to kind of make some extrapolations, or we really do just need to wait? Like, I do feel like as you, I don't know, I understand there's 81 home games. That's not a big sample size. Half of that certainly is even smaller. But do you think there's some point this season where we'll be able to tease something out, or we really do just have to wait?
Oh, I'm sure we'll try to make those connections, whether the data supports it or not, because that's what we do in baseball. Listen, any good park factor tries to account for the identity of the players who are there, right? Like, you wouldn't say Yankee Stadium is a great home run park just because Aaron Judge lives there and is hitting home runs. You know, you try to compare what he does at home versus on the road. That kind of thing takes time. But I bring that up to also kind of say the opposite. Did you know this morning, as of this morning, the Blue Jays batters have the second weakest hard hit rate in
baseball? I did know that. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. And that by itself shouldn't, you know, affect park factors, because if they go do the same thing on the road, right, then obviously that tells you something different than if it's a big split homer on the road. But, you know, if you're not hitting the ball hard, it's also a little bit hard to tell you how well the ball is going to carry, because you sort of got to hit the ball hard to do that.
Okay, so is it too early to have takeaways about that, you know, the hard hit rate and the average exit velocity also being second worst in all of Major League Baseball? Oh, they got the Oakland A's by 0.2 of a mile per hour, so that's good. Yeah, that seems bad for a team that struggled offensively. I know, not like in an overall sense. It's weird that their overall numbers last year offensively weren't as bad as the way it felt and the runs scored thing. But yeah, that's jarring to be that far down the leaderboard, even 11 games into the season.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the guys in the lineup, right? Do I really put a whole bunch of stock into the fact that Kevin Kiermaier is hitting 107 and George Springer is hitting 167? You know, no. Do I really think Justin Turner is going to slug 550 all year? Probably not, right? So much of this is just so early. But the problem here is, I think going into the season, the team not hitting the ball that hard was kind of a big concern, you know, given the moves they made in the offseason. Obviously, they didn't get the big bats and Chapman is gone. And, you know, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is a very good defender, but he's no one's idea of a big power bat. So I think there was a concern coming into the year that maybe this team wasn't going to have enough slug, obviously pending what kind of year you get from Vlad and Bo Bichette, clearly. So I'm not going to put too much into 11 games other than I was already a little worried about this, and it's already starting to rear its head a little bit. So I would say for most teams, I wouldn't really care about this at all. For this team, since it was already a concern, it maybe gnaws at me just a little bit more. That's not a data point so much as it is, oh, I was worried about this, and maybe we're already seeing it.
Yeah, it's, you know, confirmation bias is a thing, right? You believe something right to be true and you see it. You're like, yeah, I think this was happening. Back to the park for a second. And to your point, like, we don't know. Let's say they did build a pitcher's ballpark with the team that they have. Is that a bad idea? I mean, you look at the staff they have. They're going to win games because the staff is great. And, you know, maybe the bats do normalize, or you get some of the pop that you expect from Vlad and Bo, like we talk about there. But if this is a pitcher's ballpark, I actually think for this specific 2024 iteration of the Blue Jays, that's probably a good thing.
Well, I'm going to make a statement that might get me kicked out of the country before the game tonight. I think, is the pitching rotation great? And I say that they were great last year. Absolutely. Rios has looked fantastic in Kikuchi. But I had a couple of concerns about the rotation coming in, because Noah for sure was a huge question mark and he's a million miles away. Chris Bassett had a great year last year, you know, but he's also 35 and through 200 innings. And Kevin Gausman is 33. We knew he had a shoulder issue, and they're trying Bowden Francis. It hasn't worked out great so far. They have got good depth, I think, in the minor leagues, but I don't think it's reasonable to look at last year's starting rotation, which was outstanding, and say, we're getting exactly that again. You know, it's probably not going to be as good, not necessarily because the pitchers aren't as good. It's just because so many guys had really good years last year. And if you've looked around the sport right now with pitchers, it's really hard to rely on starting pitchers to do that many years in a row. So I look at the team and I think, well, the pitching might not be quite as good. So to your point, if it's a pitcher's ballpark, that might help counteract that a little bit. But the offense might not quite be as good. And if it's a pitcher's ballpark, that might hurt that too. I'm not sure it's a pitcher's ballpark, right? They've also cut down however thousands of square feet of foul territory. That'll help the hitters a little bit, right? There's a couple of foul outs you won't get, and you'll live to maybe get a better hit. And I'm just not convinced that what we saw last year is the way the ballpark is going to be forever. Like, kind of going back to what we said before, it's so early. It was 1 year. We just need to see more before I'm comfortable saying, oh yeah, it's a pitcher's ballpark now.
I think your reason, it's a reasonable take to have questions about this rotation. Jose Barrios was so good yesterday. He has been so good through his three starts this season. And considering the narrative, especially over the weekend, of pitcher injuries, that he's never spent 1 second on the injured list in his entire career. Mike, this is already like a very valuable thing that he did. But like, guys that are able to do that, do they become more valuable? The more it just feels like one pitch ends a guy's season, and we're seeing it more and more in Major League Baseball.
I don't know if I would say more valuable, because I think those guys already have been valuable, right? If you can throw a lot of innings at a high level, I mean, I don't have the numbers handy, but I was reading this morning that's something along the lines of guys who threw like 180 innings with an ERA under 3.5. There was only like 10 of them last year or something like that. And those guys are generally, if you look at the names, all considered to be very good pitchers. You know, like Chris Bassett's on that list. Pablo Lopez, I think, is on that list. There's a lot of a difficulty in finding those guys as it is. And while I don't want to diminish what we've seen in the first week, because it's very clearly a problem that's going to have to be reckoned with in terms of injuries, I do feel like we see this early in the season most years. As guys leave Arizona and Florida, they come into colder weather, the intensity gets ramped up. I'm not saying that this is a fluke. I'm not saying there won't be injuries the rest of the year. Certainly there will be. But I do think if you go back and you look the first week or the first month, we tend to see it more. And I think the difference this year is maybe the quality of the names, right? It's some of the bigger names and guys without arm injuries and guys you wouldn't have expected. And I think that's kind of what's driving the conversation right now.
Okay, so do you not think it's an existential crisis? Because, you know, we got dueling statements between the PA and Major League Baseball. It does feel like, it feels like a big deal, but maybe it's just it's normal stuff and it's just the names that are bigger this time around.
Well, it's definitely a big deal. I mean, it's been a big deal for 10 years or longer, right? I don't think the pace you're seeing this week will continue all season long. I do obviously think you'll see a lot more elbow injuries. I mean, that's clear when everybody's out there trying to throw max effort all the time. I mean, we have seen this for many years. And as far as the clock goes, you know, it's hard to sit here and say the clock has absolutely zero effect, right? Like, I don't think you could prove that. It's also hard to sit here and act like pitchers just started getting hurt last year. We've seen guys get hurt many times, even Spencer Strider, who I don't think we know is having Tommy John yet, but it sounds like that's the direction this is heading. He already had one in college when he wasn't even throwing that hard before. There wasn't a clock there. So, like I said, I wouldn't rule anything out. If we want to say the clock is part of it, that is very possible. But it's just so difficult to believe that is suddenly the primary driver when we've been seeing arm injuries going up for years and years and years, pretty much in correlation with velocity going up and up and up.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it's an old video. I'm sure you've seen it. That's been kind of making the rounds of Tyler Glasnow talking about the removal of spider tack and that being as much an issue and kind of forcing him to have to grip the ball harder. I think we all would agree that there's no world where baseball is getting rid of the pitch clock. It has been too good. You cannot put that genie back in the bottle. Could you see a world where there is some more of an understanding of going? And again, you're not going to say, hey, here's your spider tack, Garrett Cole, go do whatever you want with it. But do you think that that could be a kind of halfway point or an olive branch to the pitchers or the PA also of just saying like, hey, okay, we understand maybe we overstepped a little too far, but we also know how much we want to see baseball or offense improve across baseball, and it feels like that's counterintuitive to that as well. I just wonder what your thought is on that, like the pitch clock definitely being an issue, but the removal of the spider tack and the more stringent checks we see now, I imagine that would have a big part in it as well.
Maybe. I saw his comments. I thought they were thoughtful. I'm not aware of any great evidence that proves or disproves that. I think it's a hard thing to study. I do think guys were getting hurt before the spider tack was banned, right? Plenty of guys were using sticky stuff and getting hurt. So it's not like that is the obvious inflection point here. But I do know that since the sticky stuff was banned, you've heard a lot of players complaining about, you know, baseballs. They want it to be pre-tacked. And the league has tried this a couple of times. And for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to find one that works. So I think that is something that everybody would like to get to. I'm just not sure a version of that baseball exists right now. So is there a happy medium where maybe the pitchers can use something else to get grip, but isn't spider tack that makes the spin go wild and everybody striking out insane? Possibly. I just think if it was an easy answer to that, then they would have done it yesterday. You know, I don't think that exists right now.
Back to the Blue Jays offense just for a second here, Mike, because I believe you wrote a story when Davis Schneider mania was first happening as to whether this was sustainable or what are the things that he's doing that, and can we extrapolate that? And it did seem to me in reading that it was like, okay, maybe this guy's not going to be an MVP candidate, but like, yeah, it seems like the things he's doing, which is taking walks, having good plate appearances. And then when he gets a hit, a pitch to hit, he hits it hard. That seems like a thing you would want to do as an offensive player. He's been good this season. Every opportunity he's gotten to play, which is now it's increasing, and he's allowed to start against a really good right-handed pitcher in yesterday's starter, Luis Castillo. We'll see if he starts tonight. Dalton Varsho was the guy that was not in the starting lineup yesterday. We know Dalton Varsho's value as a defender, and yeah, if the offense is better, than it was a season ago. If it's closer to what we saw in Arizona, that's a very valuable player, but we haven't seen that as a Blue Jay yet. I mean, does Dalton Varsho's defense make him, like, is the gap in defense worth the gap in offense between he and David Schneider?
Well, it sort of depends on what positions you think they're willing to play David Schneider at. Is he strictly a left fielder DH? Do they actually trust him to play second base, third base? Those are the kind of questions that open up a lot of possibilities, because if he's just going to be a left fielder and DH, that's tough, because then if he's DHing, then Justin Turner isn't playing, right? If he's in left field, then Varsho isn't playing, and that's obviously a huge hit on defense, even though I know Varsho hasn't hit. If you think they're willing to play him at second base or third base, then I think that opens up a lot of possibilities, because you've got, you know, Connor Falefa, who's a very good defender, can play either one of those spots. You've got Biggio at second base, obviously. What I'd like to see a little bit more is maybe not so much lefty-righty platooning, but kind of offense and defense platooning. You know, start Schneider at one of those positions, and then you know you've got a guy off the bench who can come in and add some defense, because the way the offense is going, like, yes, I expect more, obviously, from Bichette and even Kiermaier, but who is a potential breakout bat aside from guys who have done it before? And it's probably Schneider, and I'm not sure it's anybody else, right? So you want to give him some run. You want to give him a shot to see how real this can be. And if that means you have to, you know, suck it up on defense a little bit, you know, maybe you don't do it when Chris Bassett's pitching. Maybe you do it on a pitcher basis. You worry less about the pitchers that he's facing and more about how he fits in with the rest of the roster. I do think there's ways to get him more playing time.
I like that, except Chris Bassett's starting tonight, and I want him to play tonight. So, yeah. But, like, in theory, that makes sense.
Sorry about that.
How dare you?
Mike, appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot. Take care.
You too. There's Mike Petrel, MLB.com, and Blue Jays Central. More and more people coming around to, look at the bottom five guys in the lineup. Where is the big offensive breakthrough coming from those guys? Like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, what, he's going to hit 30 bombs this year?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
Probably not for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Regardless of level of baseball.
Yeah. So if it's offense you need, and yesterday felt like an offensive explosion, it wasn't. They scored five runs.
The famous 500 run opening day.
That just for you, by the way.
The Dodgers score like five runs in their sleep. Like they're not playing right now, but they just scored five runs.
Score
right?
Bug 5-0 Dodgers. It's the first pitch is yet to be thrown.
Yeah, it's like at the end of American Gladiators, the Eliminator, where you get like the advantage to start I guess what they do now at the FedEx Cup, where you start that lead.
You're -10. Yeah,
that's what the Dodgers are doing. The Blue Jays don't have that advantage. They just need to scrape and claw and get their way to five runs in a baseball game, which again felt like an explosion. That's with David Schneider in the lineup going 2-for-4 with a couple of RBIs. I don't think they can afford to sit anybody that provides above average offense.
No, you need them in. I also love it when a smart person says the thing I said the day before, because I had thrown out the idea of you do it based on the I agree with you that it is becoming, the evidence is becoming so overwhelming. You start with a place that David Schneider is in the lineup, and then you kind of reverse engineer it from there. But if you are of the belief that this team clearly seems to still be of the belief that you need to get him in there, and he being Varsho, it's like maybe you do kind of look at it again, like Mike just said, you look at it of your own pitcher, not the matchup of what you're getting on offense, but the matchup of what you need defensively. I'm with you, though, that doesn't matter as much. Man. You got to get some hits. Can't win a game 0-1. Haven't seen it yet. Don't think I ever will. Get the guy who hits in there. I'm with you. Yeah. Don't look at me like I'm disagreeing with you, because I'm not sitting here screaming Ben is right.
Yeah, you should.
Okay, Ben is right.
Yeah, thank you.
With that one thing and most things wrong.
It's fine. Yeah, like he's always going to be replaced defensively at the end of games that they're leading. That's fine. And I think David Schneider understands that he's not.
It'd be a hell of a thing if he's like, how dare you take me out? I'm the babe.
That's the thing. He's like not doing that ever. Like, even though, and I get it. Like, he knows who he is and his pedigree and yada, yada, yada. But like, also, there must be a growing frustration. If I'm getting frustrated, don't you think? Like, David Schneider, after he hits a home run off Josh Hader, is like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, all I've done is, like, performed.
Sure. Of course. How could you not?
That's kind of bizarre. Anyways, enough Dave Schneider for a second.
Wow. Okay.
Mike.
Must have been an eclipse yesterday.
Mike said the thing that could be the most frightening for this team.
Oh, if the, yeah, the pitching.
If the pitching isn't as good and was the thing that we were on alert for this season.
Boy, were we.
Barrios, so good.
Yeah.
I don't question Kevin Gausman.
No, I thought it was a fair point by me to bring up heading into the season, but I don't think he's going to fall off some cliff. Even if Kevin Gausman is your number two, with Barrios being an ace, you can, that's okay. You can do that.
Yusei Kikuchi, I did view as a guy that was a potential regression candidate, but like he's figured something out, man, because the fastball always played. He just couldn't put it in the zone.
Yep.
And the pitch clock, I mean, everybody else's elbow was exploding, but for him, he's like, oh, it made me good.
Yeah.
He's like, I love it.
Make the whole game out of pitch clock.
Why didn't, more. Make it 1 second.
Yeah.
He'd be the best pitcher in baseball. No, it does feel like it took the brain out of it for Yusei Kikuchi, and he's now good. Chris Bassett, though, is the guy who doesn't throw upper 90s, right? He's doing it with guts and guile and career-high 200 innings a season ago. Yep. And not like Jose Barrios, who's never been hurt in his entire professional life. Yeah, he's the guy that you do kind of, you're maybe looking at tonight's start, like a little side-eye. You're like, what are you? And if, like, Bowden Francis is nothing, and so you got 250 rotation that you got question marks about, okay. That's a different deal. We'll see. Chris Bassett hasn't been awful, nope. But he hasn't been the guy that we saw last season
either. And what you need out of Bassett hinges a lot on what you get out of the first three guys we talked about in that conversation. Like, if Barrios is what you saw yesterday, Kevin Gausman is close to what he's been, and Kikuchi is good Kikuchi, then you have a certain floor that you can have Bassett fall to. But if one of those guys isn't the full-fledged version of themselves, then you can't afford Bassett to take some massive step back. So I think he is the hinge point, but it's also about what happens kind of in front of him and if those guys can stay elite.
Yeah. And on the one hand, it looks like a good matchup against a Mariners team that hasn't hit yet, but they're going to hit eventually.
Well, they're due. Yeah.
All right. Game two tonight from Rogers. We'll be back tomorrow. It's another edition of the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 Fan.
Good morning.